Sports, wine, life. This is the Macko and Cause podcast.
Hey everyone, and welcome to the Macko and Cause podcast. The summer hiatus is over, even though technically it's still summer, and I hate those people. Well, actually, the summer doesn't end until the fall solstice. It's like, shut up. Summer's done. Hi, Bob.
Hi, Maddie. Nice to see you again.
Good to see you.
I'm going to back you up on this. I'm going to start this new season of Macko and Cause on your side.
Hey, there we go.
Because even if summer isn't over, technically, it was a hiatus during the summer.
Yes.
So it's the summer hiatus.
Yeah. I'm always have complicated feelings about the end of summer. To me, as someone without children, summer goes on until I can no longer swim in my lake. And then when it's too cold, now for me, it's officially fall. But I can say that as a professional uncle. So for me, it's a little bit different. It's just these summer and fall and winter solstice people. It's like, listen, I get it. You read a farmer's almanac once. Okay, just shut up.
So you're a total narcissist.
Yes.
And your answer there is that you gauge the seasons based on what's the most fun thing you can do during that season. And when does it end?
That's correct.
Is it replaced by something also as fun?
And it's not, because
the fall
is great for the first couple of weeks, but then you know what fall is? It's winter, it's snow, and it's just darkness. And the sun's setting at 7:23. It's like, no! And then the sun is setting at 5:39. That's the main thing I don't like, the darkness.
The darkness, the slush. Well, and I've got big news, which I'll save till the end of the pod.
Why?
But, hence the save to the end of the pod, Maddie.
Okay.
Be patient. You're the one who loves the journey. You're always talking about how the journey is the key.
The journey is the key. By the way, how was your journey here?
It wasn't great.
You were only 12 minutes late. And I don't mean that like I'm doing one of those things where I'm being passive aggressive. The city's under construction. We're under siege. 12 minutes late is actually, I expected you for not another 15 minutes.
So Queen Street, if you're listening not in Toronto, is one of those major streets that connects a city from east to west. And you and I live very close to Queen Street.
Yeah.
You're a little bit south of it. I'm a little bit north of it. And we're on opposite ends of the city the other way, east and west.
Correct.
You live in the east. I live in the west. But the point is, we are both 5 minutes from Queen Street. So in theory, public transit that connects from east to west along this major artery would just go one way all the way from my place to your place, which actually wouldn't be so bad. You get a seat. You get a book. You do some reading or you listen to music, whatever it is.
Whatever it is.
But what makes this challenging is there's 50 million reroutes going on. So it's not just a straight line. And half these reroutes come with, okay, this is a short turn, everybody out. Now you got to wait for the next thing to come along, which only takes you part of the way. So I was thinking about this as like classic Canada in the sense that there is a very simple path to get from one place to the other. But we do it in three different parts.
Yeah.
And expect everyone to wait and be happy about it.
It's the worst. And the thing is, in the King Street, which is another major east-west artery, it's got this great streetcar used to, where, and for part of it, it would fly back and forth. But it's the same thing. There's so much construction. They're building subways. And I get it. A city that never is going under construction, woe to that city, because in the end, you're going to be screwed. But holy shit. Like, I don't do much driving in the city. I've made a rule of it. I feel so bad. I mean, I feel bad for everyone. Not as much pedestrians. I feel bad for cyclists because mm-hmm. it's dangerous out there. But I do feel bad for the drivers because it can take you 40 minutes, something that should take you 7. And the mental grind of that is just, I feel so bad. I see these drivers and they're sitting there and they look lost. And they're going nowhere. And I walk by them and I know I'll never see them again because I'm walking on foot.
I'll let you know how things are when I get there.
Pretty shit.
We've got so much sports and culture to get to. Like, we got a packed show, but I love Toronto.
So I
love Toronto. My father helped to build the arts community in this city through music and his time at Q107 especially. We're cyclists in our family. Like, when I have had opportunities to work in Los Angeles or New York, and, you know, every so often they pop up.
Yeah.
I've always thought, I don't want to live there because I love where I live. The job may be better, but I love this place. And a city is, in some ways, a community. In some ways, it's a set of laws. In some ways, it's a narrative. And I really like our narrative. And in another ways, it's a business. And I think we really succeed at the first three and fucking fail at the last one. And the problem is the last one has the ability to wipe out the first three.
It does. Yeah. It's anyway. Okay. We could do the whole thing on just on just construction.
Let's start NFL.
Yeah.
We're going to make this the Matt Kaws section of the show because you love the NFL.
I do.
I enjoy the NFL, but I've always been, tried to be honest, that I'm an enthusiast. I consider myself of the big four sports. I know a lot about basketball. I know a fair amount about hockey. I'm pretty good at baseball, especially history. Football, I'll just listen to you.
Yeah.
I you know, don't discount anything I say because I'm a moron. I might accidentally stumble on something right. But Matt's the expert.
So the Argonauts took 3 out of 4 against Hamilton. And Bob, the key there, turnover margin.
I actually, that was question 7. Is the CFL still playing?
It is. Okay. But with like week one was all these home underdogs either covering and winning, all these bad teams winning. But think about it. The two teams that went to the Super Bowl lost, and the Rams got killed, and the Bengals 7 sacks and Burrow, all those interceptions.
Okay, so those topics come into my list of questions. Okay. But basically, I'm going to call this the Matt Kaws Mandarin Buffet of NFL knowledge. You ready?
Sure, go.
Let's start off with a rank 'em because you always start with quarterbacks.
Yeah.
Rank 'em. Josh Allen, Pat Mahomes, Aaron Rodgers.
Patrick Mahomes 1, Josh Allen a thin slice down at number 2. And then who is the third again?
Aaron Rodgers. You may have heard of him.
Oh, Aaron Rodgers. He is he's not in the top 3.
Okay.
He's not in the top 3. He needs a poker face. He needs to talk to Lady Gaga. Listen, I get it. His receivers are shit. Poker face. So four all over again.
But let's think here, though. How much should that affect the way we see him? And we know this is sports.
Yeah.
Obviously, the team around you, ask LeBron James with J.R. Smith and the
It's the first pass.
So I'm just saying, rank these three quarterbacks.
Okay, then Aaron Rodgers is number 3. You put Aaron Rodgers on a better team. The other side would be Patrick Mahomes looked pretty good without Tyreek Hill, but at least he had Travis Kelce. What Josh Allen did was incredible. He only had one bad throw, the second interception. First one wasn't his fault. So that's why I give it to Patrick Mahomes. Here's the crazy stat about the Chiefs. They ran 66 plays against the Cardinals. 33 of them went for a first down.
So, Matt, as a Bills enthusiast, which is what I am.
And the Bills look better than any team last
week. I felt like this was a rewind to last year's playoffs in the sense that the Bills did something incredible on that Thursday night opener.
Yeah.
Kind of like they did that last minute drive. Mm-hmm. And it was incredible. And you're like nobody could top this. And then the Chiefs said, hold my beer.
Yeah.
As a Bills fan, I honestly thought, are you effing kidding me? This was supposed to be the coronation of this team. And that was the narrative going quite a bit into the first week. It was going to be the Bills are the best. Oh, let's see how Pat Mahomes does without Tyreek Hill.
Yeah.
But they found a way to just look a little better. Just a little better. One more time.
Well, see, I think I put Mahomes ahead of Allen, but I think the Bills looked better. They did that against the Rams. Okay, that's the Super Bowl champ. The Cardinals, they collapsed down the stretch. They got killed in the playoff game last year against the Rams that the Bills just beat. They gave Kyler Murray that contract, but with that weird study clause, it just felt like a weird offseason for the Cardinals. What Buffalo did, they kicked the shit out of that Rams. That final score was like Buffalo won by 21. They should have won by more.
Okay,
they killed them.
I agree with you, except that maybe the Rams, if you replay last season, I'm not sure they win the Super Bowl all that many times. They had lots of opportunities to get knocked out of the playoffs.
Tad to that point, they won their 3 last playoff games all by 3 points. Right. Absolutely.
And also, they lost an important person in Odell Beckham Jr. in the sense that now Cooper Kupp is alone out there, and you could really see it. So
he was.
They were easier to play against.
Yep.
It was a Von Miller revenge game, and he had his revenge. Mm-hmm. I'm not sure. I think the Rams are good. But I don't know that we should say Super Bowl champion Rams, quite the way we usually revere that.
Okay, so bring the font down a little bit. Maybe the S and the B aren't both capitalized.
You know what? It went from, It went from 14-point font to 11-point font.
Here's the two things that I love the most about Buffalo in that game. They made it look easy. There wasn't a lot of, they got the touchdown, but man, that 3rd and 11, that 3rd and 10, they somehow converted. That was the first thing. Two, they got like all those sacks on Matt Stafford, and I know there was a new left tackle. They didn't blitz once. If you could do that with just your front four, that's the secret sauce, my man.
And that's a great point, because the secondary just is really good. Mm-hmm. And there was all kinds of questions, like how would the new look offense look? And it looks perfectly fine. Honestly, I was happy to see them run.
Yeah.
Like Devin Singletary looked good.
He looked good. They got to use some more, though.
He doesn't have to be great.
No.
He just has to be good enough that you can't just sit back and wait for Josh Allen to do something.
Allen had one run midway, late in that fourth quarter. I'm like, what are you doing? The game is over. I know that the adrenaline is getting in you, but just dump it off. Let someone get 3.8 yards a carry. The game's over.
Ben Roethlisberger minus Joe Rogan equals Josh Allen.
Oh, my God. I didn't know there was going to be any math here.
It's like the skill testing question when you win a prize and they say there'll be a math question to reclaim it. No.
No.
No, I won this. Don't ask me what 2 times 4 minus 3 plus 6 is. Mind your business.
So, I think Buffalo was the best team of week one. I'll put Mahomes slightly ahead of Allen as best quarterback.
Okay. So, I'm going to go to the next tier of quarterbacks because I find this one... this one's hard. Kirk Cousins, Russell Wilson, Ryan Tannehill. Rank them.
Tannehill is in another tier below that.
You think so?
Oh, yeah, yeah. But part of that is they lost so much receiver over the last couple of years. And Tannehill needs everything around him. But Kirk,
I'll be really honest here. Yeah. I threw in Ryan Tannehill just because he was kind of a middle-of-the-pack guy.
Yeah.
But my real question here is Russell Wilson dropped to the middle of the pack?
He wasn't bad yesterday. He targeted the running backs a little bit too much. And there is good receivers there in Denver. But the real interesting one is Kirk Cousins. Because Kirk Cousins is hated. I don't know what it is. It's like the white shooting guard on Duke. There's always these guys that we all just collectively agree.
Is he the Grayson Allen of the NFL?
Oh, he absolutely is. I would say he's a Christian lady. He's absolutely that guy. Kirk Cousins, if you just looked at his numbers are the exact same as Dak Prescott's. I think Kirk Cousins has one more playoff win or the same number of playoff wins as Dak Prescott. But we all just love Dak Prescott. Even though he's on Dallas, he's a good guy, he's a good leader. We hate Kirk Cousins. But Minnesota, they have maybe the best two receiver running back combo. Their defense got better and is healthy. And they pushed around Green Bay. The Kirk Cousins conversation is going to be an interesting one because people are going to get – they're not going to want to, but people could get sucked in on Kirk Cousins. But if I have to take one quarterback for one game, I'm still going to take Russell Wilson.
So this was my ultimate trap here. Do we underrate Kirk Cousins and overrate Russell Wilson at this moment in time?
Yes.
I'll be honest. Ryan Tannehill was a throw-in.
Yeah. Now, Ryan Tannehill's fine. But do we underrate – like, Kirk Cousins puts up – Kirk Cousins is better Sharif Abdul-Rahim.
Oh,
you know, so
great reference.
Yeah, puts up good numbers, has done more winning than Sharif Abdul-Rahim. But in big, you don't trust Kirk Cousins down by 3 in a playoff game on 3rd and 8. But I do Russell Wilson. And there's no analytics there, but that's emotionally how I feel about those.
Well, I'd like to call this No Fact Tuesday.
Yeah.
Ooh. For what it's worth. Okay.
That makes it easier.
Finish this sentence. The chance of the Bengals getting back to the playoffs this year are?
They are 70%.
Okay, that's pretty good. This is knowing what I know now, which I may not have known then. The Steelers over and under for wins, 9.5.
Under. Could I say that more? Think about they were plus 5 in turnovers, and they should have lost the game. That never happens. Their offense is shit. Najee Harris is hurt. Mitch Trubisky is there. And they just lost the defensive MVP in T.J. Watt with like a torn pec who's going to be out at least 6 to 8 weeks. He's going to go for 7 different opinions. And if he does come back, what shape is he going to be in? I'll tell you right now, I love the under more even now than I did after they somehow beat the Bengals in overtime.
All right. So this is a gambling question then. Who is going to be the lap dance team in the sense that they'll take all your money and then it's over?
Ooh.
But you want to bet for it because it feels exciting.
Okay, the team that you – actually, that could be the Bengals if things continue bad because the Bengals are exciting. They got all the receivers. They got Joe Burrow. Maybe the Raiders. Devonta Adams is there. But smart people don't believe in
this. I kind of feel like it's the Cowboys, although they lost so disappointingly.
And they lost Dak Prescott.
But the marquee of the team makes you want to think that they're better than they really are. But you're right.
They would. It would have been Dallas before the Prescott injury. It might be the Bengals. I got to think about that one for a second. Could be the 49ers. The 49ers, a lot of people had them going to the Super Bowl just because of all the talent on that team. But, woo, Trey Lance looked bad.
That's a good pick, actually.
Yeah, I'm going to.
How long till Trevor Lawrence is just a guy narrative starts?
God, I hope that doesn't happen. He was the best prospect since Andrew Luck.
Mm-hmm.
And he didn't look bad against, like, I can't believe Washington won that game. I can't believe Carson Wentz looked good in the fourth quarter. One more year. He gets a gimme because of Urban Meyer. He gets a bit of a gimme because it's like it's Jacksonville, so we're always going to assume it's the organization and not him. He gets the rest of this year.
And by the just a guy, I mean like Derek Carr.
Yeah, yeah.
Derek Carr is not a bad quarterback.
No, he's a good quarterback.
He's a good quarterback.
Yes.
But like nobody says, thank God we have Derek Carr. It's in the bag.
Yes.
Which is how we wanted to talk about Trevor Lawrence. Mm-hmm. There's something so thrilling about talent.
Yes.
We love character. We love discipline. We love opportunity. But talent. Talent's just like being good looking.
Yeah.
You know, it's just... There's something like the unicorn person who just has it all.
You're just attracted to it. It's the same why pilots are usually a little bit taller. It's the same why
CEOs
are and why you would rather your president, your CEO, if it's going to be a male, is going to have a strong jaw. And if it's a female, good forearms, like Michelle Obama. You want a strong jaw in a man, and you want good forearms in a woman when it comes to the person in charge.
I always felt bad for female broadcasters, and we've seen this with Lisa LaFlamme, how it really works, but always having to show off that they're in shape with their sleeveless shirts, like the guy's in a suit and the woman's next to him wearing a vest. I always thought, like, you shouldn't have to do this.
We can agree on this. If you looked over the last 50 years of all TV broadcasters, and you just did it by the average body fat count for men and women, they wouldn't be the same.
Okay, a couple more. Just a quick check, though. Is the CFL still playing?
CFL is still playing. Winnipeg's is incredible. The problem with the CFL, once Nathan Rourke got injured, that took away the top story, and other quarterbacks are just not living up to it. It is weird because it's actually an exciting year by so many metrics. A lot of close games, good scoring, but the quarterback play has been bad. And there's no way around it.
I texted you sometime a few weeks back because I tried to watch a quarter of a game, and it was so terrible. There were so many mistakes.
Yeah.
It was like watching somebody try to learn what football is on the field.
Yeah.
Balls sailing over receivers' heads, receivers dropping passes that were actually pretty well thrown. And I sent back to you, it's like, do all the QBs suck? To which you said, maybe.
Yeah. And also, as I always say this, it's more magnified because you pass more in the CFL and because there's nine teams. Mm-hmm. The NFL will go through years where there's only like there's 18 shitty quarterbacks, but it's like the magician. Don't look over here. Look at the shiny thing. And the shiny thing is, well, even if there's bad quarterbacks, hey, look what Brady's doing. And it's easier to distract you. So it's magnified more. And that's not me trying to excuse the league. It's why it just feels worse. But no, this year, bad year for quarterbacks.
All right, last one here. And we'll take the Giants out of this one because you are a Giants fan. They won their first game.
Yeah, by the way.
Nicely done.
I'm out of my survivor pool. I took the Titans.
Well, that didn't take long.
Did not take long.
Did not survive, Gloria Gaynor.
I did not.
Who is the most fun non-Giants team to follow? Really meaning whatever your favorite team is, park it.
And
what's the other team that's the most fun to follow?
It's got
to
be the Chargers. It's got to be the Chargers because you got Justin Herbert, who might be the best quarterback at some point. You got lots of weapons on offense. Because Herbert's still on that rookie contract, they were able to bring in Khalil Mack with 3 sacks. They got a Bosa brother. I always forget if it's Nick or Joey. One's on San Fran, one's on the Chargers. I feel they could switch teams and no one would notice. J.C. Jackson, and they got a nutball head coach who is always going to confuse you. And like, hey, it's 4th and 5 at our own 9-yard line. Let's go for it. So that's fun. So the Chargers are the team.
I like that pick very much. I have to say, though, I was oddly entertained by watching Miami beat up on New England.
Mm-hmm.
And there is something quite satisfying, especially if you're a fan of the other teams from the AFC East, watching a befuddled Bill Belichick look like the game has passed him by.
But more than that, he's losing to a nerd. Like, I've heard him talk. He's a super cool guy. But if we're going through the prism of 1986, Mike McDaniel is getting is getting an atomic wedgie every quarter. And he so it's funny to see him beat, you know, the old guy.
And to go back to Revenge of the Nerds, Bill Belichick actually dresses like Ogre.
Yes.
From the film.
Yes,
with
he
the cuts, the sleeveless tops. Yes, and, and Tom Brady was his Stan Gable.
Yeah. Oh, Stan Gable, the Ted McGinley. Okay. And by the way, of note, at the time the movie was humorous, we are aware of the odd, you know, maybe.
All of it, Matt.
All of it.
All of it.
Sad thing over the weekend.
Okay.
Doing my fantasy football weekend. I promise this is not about fantasy football. And on the Friday night, we're all just hanging out, just at a friend's cottage, having drinks. And I don't know how this came to it, but we started playing a game. We started playing 80s. There was a YouTube that would play 20 seconds of like 60 different 80s TV shows. Mm-hmm. At one point, everyone just stopped and they were staring at me like I was a fucking beautiful mind. Like I was Matt Damon solving the riddle. And here was the one that I got in three notes. Simon and Simon.
Wow.
Simon and Simon.
Do you want to know what's sad about this, Matt?
Mm.
I actually can picture Gerald McRaney and and the other good-looking guy standing next to him.
It would have been great if you appeared out of the force of the robe and then you put back the
Well,
hood.
There's always two Siths, and yes. You and I may be those two Siths.
Oh, yeah. Designing women. Nailed designing.
These and aren't like, that hard, though.
For regular people, I'm not like it was
yeah,
night
for regular court. People, as you know, opposed to hopeless
I got,
nerds.
I got Dynasty. I've never even watched an episode of Dynasty, and I realized, I'm like, yeah, you know what? You know, like now kids are like, oh, too much screen time. We also had too much screen time. We just had three channels.
All right, let's move on to dot, dot, dot. Mm-hmm. And I'm going to read you these. And I think we'll switch it up. It used to be I read you these. You pick which ones you want to talk about.
Yeah.
But I think you can just pass or yeah. take.
Okay.
Okay.
Oh, I like this. I like this.
Right. Yeah. Okay. So this one's a kind of a choice between two and you can pass or take. The Jays are like franchise pad thai. It sounds exciting, and you get a lot of it, but in the end, it always feels like it was good, but underwhelming.
Ooh,
or being a Jays fan is like having a sneeze that you can never consummate. Pass or take?
I am going to take the first one.
Okay.
And maybe it's because I had shrimp pad thai last night.
How was it?
It's always good, but there's never enough shrimp.
Uh-huh.
There's never enough shrimp. There's too much tofu and there's too much noodle.
So it was good.
It was good.
But underwhelming.
Yeah. Like the good pieces of shrimp was Manoa, Jordan Romano, and the last month of Bo Bichette. Who, by the way, that home run last night in the eighth, won the last time he was at the plate, he had a 95-mile-per-hour fastball, and he was in, and nearly hit him in the face, and he was able to push that aside. But two, the guy he got the hit off of. I looked him up because I have a rule, never pay attention to Tampa players. They will be traded. And this guy has given up like three earned runs in the last 2.5 months. So not only, you know, was it got rid of the flashbacks of almost having an orbital fracture, but degree of difficulty in the eighth with two outs. Oh, my God. That was the best home run of the season.
Which is why pad thai is good.
Yeah.
But.
But to the bigger picture, it just feels like maybe it's expectation management. I don't know how you felt. Like, this year's been both thrilling and disappointing.
They set the expectations. Last year was the trailer. This year is the movie.
The Vlad quote. So the expectations are when you get the bag of pad thai and there's like seven different compartments and you can smell it and you're opening them all up. But then the bad parts of this season is when you don't mean to do it. You actually count the amount of shrimp in there.
Okay, I will go a little further with that. Vladdy is like the lime that comes with it where you go, this is amazing.
Yes.
I never have lime, yes. But lime tastes so good on this. And then you realize it's a tiny little wedge and it's not that juicy.
Yeah.
And so you're like trying to compress it to get even just like a few drops out of it. And then you go, I love lime. I wish there was more.
I wish there was more. Yeah, that's a good one.
Okay, next one. How bad is it these days, to find out you had your fly open at an event? Let me explain.
Yeah.
I went to we were going to do the pod yesterday, but a TIFF lunch came up,
mm-hmm.
and I was there and had a lovely time, met Ron Perlman.
Mm.
He was really great.
Okay.
He said, hey. And I said, hi.
Yeah.
He was nice about it.
So you didn't talk about Pad Thai with him for 20 minutes?
I did not. It didn't come up. I realized as I went home that my fly was open, and I have no idea how long it had been open.
Right.
But then I thought to myself, when we were kids.
Oh, the worst.
Like, honestly, yeah. Like, just not quite as bad as farting or pissing yourself.
Yeah.
But not that far behind.
Yeah.
That you have your flies open, right? Mm-hmm. It was just a week of torture. But it doesn't feel that bad these days.
You're right, it doesn't. I think, you know what it started with? When people didn't care about what color socks you have, or you could have two different socks.
Interesting.
You know, and now that's just the norm. Yes, I think the shame factor definitely goes down, but at a TIFF event, maybe goes a little bit higher. Where'd you go for lunch, by the way?
It was just like a hotel thing.
Okay, okay.
You know, it's just like...
Good lunch?
Yeah, it was okay.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, I just stayed in the backstage.
Mm.
You know me.
Yeah.
I'm part of the road crew.
I would have been in the front with a glass of sparkling, you know, talking about what we were drinking.
100%. We would have been there for you, Matt. Actually, you know, you mentioned the interesting thing about socks. I also think sexting took some of the steam out of having your fly open, considering that, like, people are texting each other their genitalia all the time.
Yeah.
It seems like there's a lot less mystery about somebody's business these days.
I think I'd be the worst sexter. One, I think I feel a little repressed. I think I'm a little sexual repressed about that kind of stuff. Two, I fucking hate typing. Like, I hate typing on my phone. And three, it would feel like a big goof. And also, maybe it's a self-esteem thing. What woman is going to read me saying, yeah, honey, I can't wait to plow ya? And she's like, yes, I look forward to this plowing to come. Like, well, what woman is going to read that and be happy with it?
Well, you've been with someone for a long time, and so have I. And I find there's a point in your relationship where it actually becomes like a negative thing to do that sort of stuff.
Yeah.
It's like, oh, what are you doing? Are you like thrilling me with this exciting new revelation of yours? Been there, done that.
Yeah. We're definitely past that stage. And we're at the stage of every now and then when Amy walks to bed, I feel bad. I'm like, you look like you. I look like me.
There is a point in every relationship where the best thing you can offer the other person is a neck rub.
Yes. Oh, yeah. Oh, Amy loves the neck rub.
Right?
Loves the neck rub.
Right. It's better than any present.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's better than any like sort of shared fun day out.
Yeah.
You know, it's just the neck rub because life is relentless.
And just like other things, the neck rub, when I give it, it's usually not long enough and not satisfying, and then I go back to whatever it is I'm doing.
Between Carlos Alcaraz and Serena Williams, tennis has the most impactful stories of any sport in the world right now.
No, okay. Then this one, we're flying in different circles. The moment Serena Williams lost, or, you know, choked in that third round. I just like saying that because, you know, to say anything negative about Serena, you are a hero.
No, it's a good anti-narrative.
You're a hero.
Yeah. Traditionally a choker.
Yeah, traditionally, right?
Historical choker.
Her and Venus choked in the doubles. But the moment she was out, Djokovic couldn't come in, Nadal got booted, and CanCon got shut off. And maybe it's just me. I stopped caring about tennis.
So Carlos Alcaraz is really great for the sport.
Yeah, he is.
He's 19 years old. It was weird. About like a year ago, I was just flipping by TSM. Cincinnati opens on. And I'm watching this kid, like, you know how sometimes you just land on something and you don't care, but you're watching it anyway?
Yeah, it's when face-off comes on.
It was so random. And I'm watching this kid and I'm thinking, I don't know who this is. And tennis has a million guys you're never going to know about ever again.
Yeah.
And I'm like, wow, he's really interesting. And then over the next couple of days, I noticed, you know, it looks like he won that match. Ooh, he won that one 5. Like, it just random facts popping up on ESPN.com. And he won the tournament. And I thought, oh, okay, great. But then it was the beginning of the Alcaraz run. And all of a sudden, I started noticing people are talking about him more and more. So I feel like I accidentally stumbled onto the beginning of this kid's rise.
Oh, it's like when you get the first, like, your favorite band, when you got the first album.
100%. Or if you saw them in a club before signed their big deal, you know?
Yeah.
So the fact that tennis has been so dominated globally by three guys for the better part of 2 decades, now you have this 19-year-old who's the youngest guy to ever hit number one. Mm-hmm. Now, there's reasons for that. Nadal is hurt. Federer's, it breaks my heart to say, but he's probably done.
Federer's done, and Djokic is a hero standing up for his beliefs.
Okay, so when eventually they get that sorted out,
he
still has good tennis left, Novak Djokovic. But the rise of Alcaraz, who everyone's decided is this exciting, dynamic, young presence.
Yes.
I can't watch those three guys beat each other anymore for history. I just feel like it's just another grab for three guys trying to prove who's the GOAT. I've watched that for the last 5 years. But now, it's the finally. Like Djokovic beating up on Medvedev or some Tsitsipas. Or like, yeah. I don't give a shit. These guys aren't that good.
Yep.
You know, like, they're not even as good as Andy Murray was. And Andy Murray couldn't really crack through those three.
Yes.
So now, it's like, well, guy, you gotta, to be the man, you gotta beat the man.
Exactly.
And you're not the man anymore.
Yeah, well, here's the thing about Alcaraz.
Or is he?
He needs to beat Djokovic or Nadal in a final of a Grand Slam when that individual, when either of those two all-time greats are fully healthy. It can't be Nadal has limped into the finals. What a heroic, anything left to give. No. It's Nadal looks like he is at the peak of his power. Djokovic is at the peak of his powers. And Alcaraz, how do I pronounce his last name?
Who?
The teenager.
Alcaraz.
Alcaraz. I feel like I'm going to
say how long until you say Alcatraz?
Oh, like, I don't know. Let's see what time I'm on air today. 1:15. Ooh, Alcatraz is a good one. You'll never escape his forehand. Ooh, I kind of like that. But he's got to beat one of those guys. Because here's the thing. Luke Skywalker killing a stormtrooper ain't bad. Luke Skywalker killing Darth Vader, now you get to be a hero. That's what's got to happen.
And that's it. You're setting up the classic rivalry, old versus new, good versus evil. The stakes have changed. There's always stakes when guys are playing to see, or women are playing to see, who's the best ever. Mm-hmm. Like, the GOAT narrative is a great one.
Yeah.
But it's been fucking relentless for like 4, 5, 6 years. It's the same three guys like, no, I'm the GOAT. No, you're the GOAT. You know, now it's finally a new narrative. And it might be the beginning of wouldn't it be great to have a 20-year run for another kid who's likable and amazing? And
as long as there is a couple foils. It's the only thing actually against Serena. It's not her fault. And, if she was at her peak when, Hingis and everyone else was around, and Navratilova, I don't think Venus wins as many majors or Serena wins as many majors, but I still think she probably ends up having more than them. But it's the only, and it's not a fault. It's just sometimes the cyclical nature of sport. We see it in boxing.
I've got an analogy for Serena from the world of boxing.
Go.
She is the Easton assassin. She is Larry Holmes.
Mm.
Larry Holmes is one of the greatest heavyweights who ever lived, who beat the shit out of a ton of nobodies and never really had a rival. No true great Frazier to his Ali. No great Jake LaMotta to Sugar Ray Robinson. There was no trilogies that anyone cared about. Even Mike Tyson and Evander Holyfield generated generational interest out of guys who are essentially second tier great heavyweights. And it's not Serena's fault, but as we look back at her career, and it was an incredible career, and she probably is the greatest tennis player who ever lived. It's hard to say. You get to a certain point.
She's at the point where you want to say she is great. I mean, no one's going to argue.
Joe Montana.
Yeah.
You know, John Elway. I don't know.
I got Elway slightly over Montana, but we're too busy for quarterback all-time rankings. Johnny Unitas in the top five, Brett Favre ahead of Peyton Manning.
Sorry. All right. I don't know if you've seen any of these, but I hope you've seen them both, and I certainly hope you've seen the one of them, but I'm going to make a bold statement here, ..
Go.
So far, Rings of Power is better than House of the Dragon.
Okay. I haven't seen either yet.
No.
I've been
the fuck is wrong with you?
Traveling around.
So?
With Amy a lot, one TV, she's not into it.
Okay.
But when she gets... And also, you know what part of it is? And we'll get to it. Shelve that. I finally...
Okay, well, let's park this one.
Yeah, park that one. But also, I finally started watching that Succession show.
Oh, it's so good.
First couple episodes, I didn't like it. It's just like, it's just miserable rich people being miserable to other miserable rich people. Then it got going. I will say this to Cameron. I forget, Alan Ruck. Mm-hmm. Don't ever fucking micro-oxidize wine again. Don't you ever put a fucking bottle of probably Grand Cru Burgundy in a blender. You stick it in a decanter. You let it wait 3 hours like a goddamn human being. Sorry, Bob. I know everyone's been talking about it. I just have to get off my chest. What's the next one?
Emmy night last night. Here's my .. Better Call Saul will be the last great show of the complicated men behaving badly era of prestige television.
Oh, I hope not.
There will never be another show that is great and as nakedly about a complicated man behaving badly.
One, I haven't seen the final season yet.
Oh, it's so good.
I know. Two, I hope that's not true because it's a great genre and it deserves to be there. And by the way, I don't mind, like anything else, like same thing in tennis when there's dips. I don't mind if it, you know, goes away for a while, is replaced with, you know, other protagonists and other points of view. Knock yourself out. Good content is good content. I just hope that we somewhere down the road get other shows that are as good as Better Call Saul.
Well, I agree. And I think the shows that are going to replace it during this era, and the statement was that it's during this era of prestige television.
Yeah.
That assumes that prestige television will continue on indefinitely, which I don't think it will. And it also assumes that the next series of great shows are going to resemble Better Call Saul, mm-hmm. which I don't think they will.
Yeah.
You know, I watched a bit of The Bear, which everyone loves, and honestly, I just thought I can't watch another thing about a guy in his 30s who's on drugs and has fucked up in his life. And,
yeah.
You know, like, I get it. I get it. Oh, let's edit it quickly so then I'm disoriented just like he is. You know, like, I've just seen it so many times yeah. that Better Call Saul was able to break out of that by being unabashedly a love letter to the 1970s movies.
Mm-hmm.
You know, slow, thoughtful.
Yes.
The pacing of it was everything. And if you sunk in, it was eventually like reading a novel. And you're a novel reader.
Yes.
And you don't mind a novel that's 1,000 pages long if you're with the journey.
Yeah.
And this was like a Norman Mailer's
executioner song. Oh, so good.
You love that book.
I love that book. Love that book.
The size of it would scare most people away.
Yes.
But they'd be wrong because you don't have to think of it as a 1,200-page book. Think of it as 1,200-page books.
Yeah, exactly. Binge watch. Binge read.
Right?
Yeah.
And that's the way it's designed. It's designed to work in. Okay. Okay, so Canadian public politics. Ooh, it's going to get ugly.
You know what's the first problem about it, Bob?
Hmm.
Do you realize this entire... This won't shock you. This entire time, I've been calling him Paul Revere. I thought it was...
Paul Revere?
Paul Oliver.
Okay.
Paul Oliver. I've been calling... Hey, there's Paul Oliver. He's got those folksy...
Paul Oliver?
Yeah. He's got those folksy videos. And it wasn't until recently when I heard... How does he say his last name again?
Polyev.
Polyev. I've been... I feel like Homer Simpson. I've been calling him his Cramapple this whole time.
All right, so maybe not ugly for you. You sound like you're sufficiently distanced from it.
Can I ask you a question?
Sure.
The psychology, and again, on the front end, not as many people use Twitter as we all think. We in the media elevated that it's this thing that every human being is using when the actual population that's on it, it's small, and the ones that actually tweet is even smaller. What do you think? What is the psychology? And this is on both left or right. When someone, they do the quote retweet, you know, either ripping on the conservatives or ripping on Trudeau. And they're like, this man must resign. This man's in jail. This man's a racist. This man's a socialist. What is the psychology? And I'm not talking about someone who does it every now and then. The people that do it relentlessly, do they really think they're convincing someone else? Or is it just they need?
No.
Is it that they just need that release? Like, what, like, I see this all the time. And, like, there are people I follow on Twitter. And if I see a retweet and it's a message that's more left-leaning, I know, okay, it's going to be one of these five followers because they do it over and over and over again. Same thing on the right. And I always wonder, what is the motivation behind that?
We convinced kids who were raised during the 70s, 80s, and 90s in the Toronto public school system that they mattered.
Yeah.
And that their voice matters.
Yeah.
And so now when you get out into the world and you're like, it's actually not the way it was sold to me.
Yeah.
And then this Twitter thing comes along where you get to talk and it matters at least to 8 people.
Yeah.
And I'm not saying this to be facetious. I actually think that we taught people in our culture that the individual matters. So when you grow up and you see that it matters a lot less, what matters is if you're successful, then you get stuff. But that's not the same as being an individual. That's the same. That's being a successful individual, which not everybody gets to do.
That is a great point. And I never thought of that. Maybe a lot of just that habit, that natural reaction to quote, retweet, to put your opinion out there. I think that kids, not our generation, but a couple generations after, self-esteem was a bigger thing. Mm-hmm. Our generation was cartoons of people blowing up other things.
Mm-hmm.
Then it was cartoons of you're the best, you're wonderful, you're special. And I'm not demeaning any of that. But then also Madison Avenue, Nike, you're the best. Just do it. Just go for it. You're the best. You're the hero.
Empowerment.
What's that?
Empowerment.
Yeah, exactly. And empowerment to a certain level is great. Then there's Kevin Durant. And I think that could be the part of it about just this reason for Twitter. Oh, I never thought about it. That's good.
And I'll take this one step further. If you look at the right, and particularly the far right, the buzzword is freedom.
Yeah.
I want my freedoms. And Poliev worries me because he's up there saying, I'm going to create more freedoms than any other prime minister in history.
Yeah.
But really, it's just a buzzword saying, fuck everybody else that you don't like.
Yeah.
And you get to be you and you get to do you. But here's one of the interesting things. The people who buzzword freedom, I think what they really mean, except in very specific cases, but I think what most of them mean is, I want to be an individual that matters.
Mm-hmm.
I don't want to lose my individuality. And that's a meaningful goal. But you don't become an individual by not having any responsibilities to other people. This whole idea of freedom has become, well, all these people I don't like are telling me to do this, and I fucking hate them, so the only way I get to be me is to make sure they go down in flames, and that's how I'm going to be free. But it's not going to make you free. What actually makes you free is when you are part of a community and you choose to do things or not. You have to have those choices. These choices are being presented to you. You're allowed to debate them. You're supposed to debate them. But the idea that we will just eliminate all these potential responsibilities is not freedom.
No.
It's childhood.
It's a great point. And you're right about the whole freedom thing. My fantasy football draft, my group of friends, it's not all right. There's left-leaning, there's right. But it's certainly, if I did the collective and just poured it all in, it would probably lean slightly center right.
Yep.
And we laugh at this, we make fun of the convoys and the honking, and not that we're against people that want to, you know, demonstrate, and the whole freedom thing. And like, I wonder, who is this message for? Like, my group of friends, mid-40s, you know, most of them with a very good job. Hell, all of them got better jobs than I do by some status. And the whole freedom thing, it feels like a con, because we have so much freedom here in Canada. And I can tell you, as bad as our COVID rules are, and there's a lot that are stupid, and we could look back at some of the things that we did as just dumb. A lot of places in Europe, South Africa, far harsher than what we had here in Canada. So the freedom thing always, I agree with you. The freedom thing always felt like a bit of a con.
You know, I grew up in a home where my grandparents lived in the Soviet Union.
Mm-hmm.
And they came here not because they wanted to, but because there was a war. They were displaced. Eventually, they found their way to Canada. So when I hear people say stuff like, well, I don't want my teachers to have to teach critical race theory, and this is oppression, and this is fascism, I'm like, actually, when the Nazis kicked down the door of the barn that my grandfather was hiding in, and he ran out the back through a field like Inglorious fucking Bastards,
yes,
that was more like fascism, because they were going to murder him with their guns.
Yeah.
Their guns that murder people.
Yeah.
So this just drives
me
crazy.
The fascism thing, I hate that on both sides. And you see it, you know, I think you see it. Like, whenever I hear anyone say, like, I am, as I always say, I love debate. I hate dismissiveness. I do not dismiss. However, if you start doing any sort of fascism or Nazi allusions to whatever the topic of conversation is, I'm like, well, we shall go our separate ways. Drive safe.
Now, here's the thing. Once you get past a certain point on the right, though, those become legitimate concerns, because you have people who are not crying for individualism. They're crying for the destruction of the current system.
Mm-hmm.
They are utterly, totally anti-establishment, fired up by grievances.
Yes.
And when we say it's true on both sides, it is true on both sides. However, I would argue that the far left have less impactful designs than the far right does. Like, I think the far right is leaning theocracy.
Yeah,
but the far left in everyone else's world is, well, you're making this be a godless world, and I'm freaked out about that. And religion is all behind this. So I want to see, the reason it's going to get ugly is just not that Poliev is totally comfortable.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, eager to engage in cultural debate. Aaron O'Toole, I disagreed with him policy-wise, but I never felt like he was going to try and gin up the base so that they just hated the guts out of everybody.
Yeah.
He had a balancing act, because a lot of, as we saw, they turfed him because he was unwilling to play the identity politics game in the way that people wanted him to play it. And who's a member of a party? Like, let's think about this. Like, Poliev became the head of the party. But who votes? It's not you and me. It's not the public. It's people who belong to that party.
Yeah.
So the really, really invested folks are effing mad. And they want somebody who's going to be mad for them. Hey, you be my avatar. You be the guy who goes to Justin Trudeau. You suck, because he's not following me on Twitter, but he's got to listen to you in the House of Commons. Trudeau is a master at flipping that around to the middle and saying, do you see how scary these people are? And the problem is, the people like your friends who are center right, they get lumped in with a bunch of lunatics.
Yeah.
Now, unfortunately, and we'll see how this plays out, those lunatics picked a lunatic. to represent them. So let's see how it goes.
But
that guy was not Aaron O'Toole, and he basically made Aaron O'Toole look like he had an armband on his sleeve.
I don't follow as close. When I look at Polyev, I don't see lunatic. But I agree with you. Anything, I don't want any campaign where the foundation is based on hate.
He's smart. He's strategic. He's not Sarah Palin, where he's like, ah, the media's gotcha questions, and I'm folksy and all this stuff. No. It's a much more, he's more like Ted Cruz, where he looks at this and says, oh, I just have to smile and tell these lies or not piss off these people. And they are lies because he misrepresents information. So if you take an if you take something that happened and you misrepresent it, that's lying. And so he's very comfortable doing this or bowing out and not talking about things that need to be talked about. And people will say the whataboutism. I got my problems with Trudeau too. But this all circles back to, I think Trudeau is actually going to walk into the firefight that he always said was going to happen.
I think Trudeau wins because that's what this country always does. Votes left.
I don't know, man. I don't know. I don't think that's true. Harper won 3 elections.
Yeah, but that feels like a lifetime ago. Like, what was the quality of our phones like back when Harper won? Like, just it feels like a different lifetime.
You know, this is going to be an identity. Well, they're all identity politics issues. Like, and
would
right,
it be nice
right up
if there,
who's
would
the
it be
leader?
Nice if you could find a way to get all the identity out. Just whoever the leaders want to be, they just put together a 2-page summation or maybe a little bit longer summation of what they're going to do and be very specific. And you get rid of all rhetoric. You get rid of, you know, that group's a racist, that group's a fascist, that group's a socialist. Wouldn't it be nice if it was just, here's all our policies.
So here's our problems and here's how I intend to tackle them.
That's it.
A dream. Okay. Final game here because we got to be running out of time. And Leafs camp hasn't opened yet, but I feel like Leafs conversation has.
Yeah.
So I don't want to be left out. But again, this is No Facts Tuesday. Mm-hmm. So I don't want to talk about the fourth line and who's going to make the team or cap issues.
No.
All narrative.
Yeah.
All narrative as the new season's upon us. So I want to call this the old and tired versus the new sexy in terms of storylines for the Leafs. You ready?
Yeah.
All right. So basically, I want you to give me who's the old version of this and who's going to be the new version
gotcha.
Of this. And I will give you an example of it. So player that I'm sick of hearing about. I'm sick of hearing about Alex Kerfoot.
Mm.
I feel like we talk so much about this guy and who he is and who isn't. He's a $3.5 million player.
Yeah.
On a team that has $11 million players. I'm not saying he's not important, but he trended all summer.
Yeah.
Him and Scotty Barnes, one of the two of them was trending all summer.
That is true. That is true. I need to change my Twitter algorithm.
So I'm tired of hearing about Alex Kerfoot. Here's who I'm about to be tired hearing
Can
about.
Can I guess?
Yeah.
Well, I thought you were...
I was going to say Nick Robertson.
You're going to say Nick Robertson. I'm going to say Rasmus Sandin.
Okay, so I'll go first, then you go,
yeah,
okay?
Yeah.
I've been hearing for the last couple of years, even going back to the playoffs, well, if they call him Nick Robertson and he can just score, it's like, yeah, but wait, he's a kid and he has no experience. Like, the Leafs are so poor in terms of offensive prospects that are ready to come up and contribute now. Like, we're even talking, does Matthew Knies make the team? I don't know. But Robertson's been this name that's been kind of kicking around as this succulent morsel that may or may not exist. If he makes the team, he'll be on the fourth line.
Yeah.
But fans who, like, and remember, I once did an hour Cebulski on Mike Brown's returning to the team.
Ooh.
So, you know, is he the fire? Is he the spark plug they need?
Honey, I got to stay in the car. They're coming back from commercial break to talk about Brown. You take the groceries in.
But I feel like Nick Robertson has kind of slid into that role of guy who's barely, he's aspiring to be mostly inconsequential.
When really,
but we talk about him like he's this guy that we're waiting for.
Yeah, what the Leafs need is a legit, no-doubter, second-line winger. And again, I understand it's weird. Tavares nearly was a point-per-game guy, and yet it just did it. Anyway.
Okay, we got that. To your point, like Sandin and Liljegren, I think, deserve that attention because
they
were going to be contributors.
I'm just tired of Sandin. No, and Sandin's going to be a contributor in the big picture. But
if he plays.
Well, that's the thing. It's like, why are you holding out? You have zero leverage. And by the way, Rasmus, if the goal is, like, you know what Rasmus Sandin's goal needs to be? He needs to look at Morgan Riley. And even if it's like, well, I got to be on the right side. That's my goal. Because they're going to put Brody with Muzzin. Muzzin's numbers were at their best when Brody was with him. So what Rasmus Sandin has to do, goes, Morgan Riley, that's where I want to live. I want to live in a 2-bedroom condo in Maple Leaf Square next to that. That's what Sandine needs to do. But now there's this, like, you can hold out, but usually the contract holdouts are the guys that have done more. Sandine hasn't done a ton. You know, he's looked good, and there are times he looks like he could be a top four guy. But Sandin's goal needs to be, I'm going to hang out with Morgan Riley, not I need to get 700,000 more than Timothy Liljegren.
I agree with you 100% on that. I'm a little bit jaded on this one because Marner was so emotional. Nylander was so emotional. This guy is so far from having the impact that those guys we were worried about losing for a whole season, or there being an acrimonious split between player and team. Like, if we lose Rasmus Sandin, I'm just a little more concerned about that than the do we trust Justin Hall.
Yeah. Oh, no, that's true. Bigger picture, Sandin's...
Like, you think he's good.
Yeah. I think what it comes down to is just Sandin isn't good enough yet to have a contract holdout.
Right.
So
you have to earn it.
You've got to earn it. And he just hasn't earned it yet.
He's a bit like a YouTube star. Mm-hmm. Like, as opposed to the comic who has to go out and play a lot of shitty road gigs for nobody, or the band that plays to 10 people in Boise, Idaho.
Right.
You know, he's a bit of a YouTube star in the sense that he came out, people were all excited about him, he delivered, and it's like, but there's no legacy there, buddy. Okay, where's the soup? And by that I mean, who's the player you're going to root for this year? Mikheyev is gone, he was soup. Jack Campbell's gone, we loved him, he was soup. Who's the player you're rooting for? Who's this year's soup?
Maybe I would say Matt Murray. Is he too good? Is he too important to the team's infrastructure?
Yeah, I think so.
Okay, so. Gone.
Or there's not enough of a story there, maybe? Like, well, there is a story.
But there
actually.
Is concussion there is. No, last year.
You're right.
But no.
No, Matt Murray, I would accept that answer.
I'll go David Kampf.
That was mine.
Yeah, I'll go Kampf.
That was mine. I want to love him. And I'm thinking, like, at some point, is someone going to call him Mein Kampf?
I hope not.
Yeah, I hope so. I hope not too.
Yeah, let me try that on air. Welcome back on TSN 1050. And now on, can Mein Kampf really be? Oh, wait, I just got a text from my boss, an email. Hello, is this mic on? Hello? Why did we go to commercial break? Why is security here? I can't get the stuff on my desk. I don't even have a desk. Who's got a desk anymore? Goodbye, everybody.
Who's this year's scapegoat going to be? And there's two divisions here. One is impact player, and the other one is cannon fodder.
Right.
I call it the Brooklyn Brawler division.
Oh, I love it.
Like, you're on the card, but you're
bottom. Needs to be said, just shot at it like a cannon. It's almost like you're a producer.
Let's start with impact players, scapegoat. So last year was Tavares.
Yep.
He's the old and tired scapegoat for everything. Impact players.
I was really hoping for him to be
this year. We've had Marner be that guy. We've had Nylander be that guy.
Yeah.
Now, you could go back to those.
I mean, okay.
But they're all old and tired.
But if it's the impact, it's got to be either... what's the lowest end impact player? Would that be Morgan Riley? Because it feels like it's going to be Riley, Nylander, Matthews, Marner, Tavares.
I think
it has to be one of those five.
I think Muzzin should count.
I don't know.
Maybe, you know, Brody could count.
I think
Matt Murray could count. I think Sheldon Keefe could count.
I'm gonna go Kyle Dubas.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Okay. You're not tired of talking about him?
Oh, you never get. Oh, Bob. You never get tired. I could tweet out right now on Twitter. Kyle Dubas is the seventh best GM in the NHL, and suddenly it would be like I said, you know, mine David Kampf on air. I would just get a ton of hate. Only one of them would be rightfully so. I'm gonna go. If you're gonna go high end, like. Dubas is a polarizing figure. If the goalie situation doesn't work out, we're going to be looking at Mr. Fun Glasses, and we're going to be getting angry at him.
My pick is Sheldon Keefe, if they start out slow.
Yep.
Only because he hasn't really caught any venom yet. And it's just, right?
You're right, yeah.
He's kind of skated. And okay, so if we're looking for a scapegoat, he would be a new one.
Okay, if it's new, I can't do Kyle Dubas. There's no way you can.
Well, it's the old and tired versus the new sexy.
Yeah.
Like, last year, everything was about Tavares is barely a point of player, a point of game player, and he's making $11 million. I don't know if you've heard that narrative yet.
I have.
Okay.
I've said it, usually on Wednesdays. Slow days.
Dubas is the worst. Matthews is untouchable. Marner's a suck. Oh, no, he's a genius. Nylander's aloof. Yeah. Oh, no, he's just complicated and Swedish. Sheldon Keefe has kind of not been part of this merry-go-round.
Yeah. When you work it like that, because to me, Brody and Muzzin aren't good enough to be... Like, Muzzin's salary is good enough, but Muzzin, But no, I like the Sheldon Keefe is a good one. I was trying to make an Austin Matthews one, but that's just
ridiculous. Just not going to happen. And yeah. I thought maybe Morgan Riley, but he's kind of loved. And also, I'm not sure that he's making enough money that people are going to be that mad. And I think he'll be
fine. But his
fine.
New deal kicks in.
Yeah, I know. And so Morgan Riley was sort of my first choice.
Yeah.
But then I thought, you know, at some point, if they don't start out great, it's going to be, why can't the guy get any results from this roster?
Yeah. Yep. Nope. Sheldon Keefe's a good one.
The Brad Marchand, who's going to be the player you hate going into next year. And by the way, Brad Marchand is the old tired.
Yeah. Yeah.
Ooh. Although you could pick him again because you hate him so much.
God. Moving on from Brad Marchand. Well, then you got to sort of go through. How about, I was going to say Johnny Gaudreau. You know, why'd you pick Columbus? But now you can't hate Johnny Hockey. You know, you stumped me on this one. You stumped me on this
one. I'm going to go Corey Perry just because the last couple playoffs he's been such a pain in the ass.
But the thing is, Corey Perry's a postseason hate guy. You don't hate him in game 38.
But doesn't that translate now, though? Like, I agree with you, but I thought it's been 2 years in a row.
Yeah, but it still applies because he's not going to be like a second line guy. You know, the guy you got to hate is a guy who's getting lots of minutes and stuff like that.
Well, maybe people who are listening can send us their thoughts.
Yeah.
I forgot to do a Brooklyn Brawler division of the scapegoat. Mine is Alex Kerfoot.
Yeah.
I think like he's probably a bottom six guy.
Yes.
Although I guess there's a chance he could wind up there with
Tavares
and Nylander.
Because Kerfoot can also go, why is the second line not working? Kerfoot, you're getting paid this much.
Right. Why aren't you a good center?
Yeah.
You know, and then if he winds up on the fourth line, like I'm already just my eyes are glazing about the fourth line conversations.
And that's why we're going to stop here. We got 2 minutes. You said, Bob, you've got a special announcement. What's going on?
Oh, well, I don't know if I've mentioned this, but like I've got my hiatus year coming up.
That's right. You have mentioned it before. When is your hiatus start?
It starts in January. So I'm going to be traveling the world for 9 months.
Oh, my God. That's so exciting. Now, where are you going to go?
I'm going to be based out of California for a while
and
based out of Germany for a while.
Mm-hmm. That's so good. Where are you going to be in Germany? I'll send you, even though you know,
just come over.
What's that?
Just come over.
Yeah.
And we'll all hang out.
Oh, my God. I was good. I mean, who am I to tell you Germany? I was there for 2 weeks. You've been there a bunch and your sister's
there.
Sure.
We have got family there.
So exciting.
Yeah, it's pretty great. We're going to go down to California, do some show business stuff for a little bit, and then we're going to take a good old-fashioned family break and spend a few months in based out of Germany.
That is great, Bob. That is so exciting.
My wife got one of those 4 and 5 deals from her work, which is amazing that they offer it. Mm-hmm. So, you know, there's a little bit of cash coming in. I'll be able to. Lately, I've been making documentaries, audio documentaries for Apple.
Cash cow, audio documentaries.
Yeah, well,
cha-ching.
Yeah, it's true. Oh, how the not so mighty have fallen. it's been great. I did a 4.5-hour documentary series on 1970s punk.
Ooh.
And I just finished a 2-hour feature doc on the life of Joe Strummer.
Yeah.
So,
cool.
I love it, actually.
Yeah, of course. It's a passion.
Honestly, I have to say, I've been doing this for 30 years, and I feel like I finally acquired the skills to do these stories justice.
Yeah, and I mean, if anyone could, you could. You know, there's not me kissing your ass, but as a storyteller. And also, what you're good at is just organizing everything. And always, everything starts with one thing. What's the question?
Yeah.
What's the question?
Yeah.
It's something you've been hammering since 2000.
Yeah, I think for anybody who's a storyteller, and I'm not saying I'm so good at it, but this is just my method, is I try to identify what's the one thing we're trying to talk about.
Yeah.
And if it's an interesting thing, you should be able to talk about it in 100 different ways.
Yep. Bob, we are out of time. The only disappointing thing here is when you said you had a big announcement, I thought it meant you'd got your driver's license. Boy, what a dummy am I. Goodbye, Bob.
Thanks for listening to the Macko and Cause podcast. Remember to subscribe on iTunes or Audioboom. And if you like the podcast, leave a review. If you don't like the podcast, then maybe don't leave a review.